In order not to take time away from your discussion, this will be a brief presentation just to kind of frame where we are and why we're talking about this again tonight. Suffice it to say, there's been more than 30 years of history for the town looking at ways of having a diverse housing stock. But, you know, times change, the market has changed, both for builders and for buyers. And I think this became apparent last year when the Home Trust came before you on more than one occasion just in 1 year looking for text amendments to try to make their program work a little better. The most recent of these amendments came right before the summer break on June 26th, and at that point the board in your discussion noted a comment from the Planning Board in their recommendations that perhaps it was time to take a step back and look at a more comprehensive view of our affordable housing program and how we might just look at it as a whole rather than little piecemeal corrections. At the same meeting, the board created an affordable housing task force, appointed 3 members to serve, and charged them with coming back with a recommendation to the full board, focusing mainly on policy. Shortly thereafter, the Planning Board, taking advantage of their first effort to promote National Community Planning Month, took up the topic of affordable housing and held a series of 3 dialogue sessions throughout the month of October, which really went over quite well, if I may say. And they focused on pretty much everything but policy. To continue, the task force presented its recommendations to the board in December, and we'll hit those in just a minute. But as part of that discussion, the board requested a future work session to discuss in more detail 3 main topics. One was the task force recommendations related to the ordinance, the results, which at that point were still forthcoming, of the affordable housing dialogue session, and also the possibility of the town pursuing a more active role in either purchasing or somehow retaining affordable housing, taking on a little bit of a different role in the process. Subsequent to that meeting, the Planning Board did present their report, the findings of the affordable housing dialogue sessions, and that's in your packet as a refresher. And also, on a somewhat parallel track, there's been some ongoing conversations, and this came up again just recently, talking about the potential use of the green track and perhaps of an affordable housing component to that as well. The task force has reconvened with Alderman Lavelle taking Dan Coleman's spot. And just before I forget, even though it's somewhat not related to your specific timeline, in April, the middle of April, I think it's the April 16th meeting, you're tentatively scheduled to have a presentation from UNC's Department of City and Regional Planning talking about housing and transportation and affordability. So there's more information coming. Just as a quick refresher, the task force focused their recommendations on 2 distinct areas. One was the payment in lieu option, and second was the small house, the size limited requirement. And it was broken up into 4 specific subcategories, and these are in your packet. This is really for the benefit of the audience as a refresher. The first one really had to do with looking at the affordable housing percentage, maybe reducing the percentage from 15 to 12 and looking at expanding the continuum of income and other ways of providing more flexibility. And these relate, when we always look at consistency, to Vision 2020, and these are our 2 most relevant affordable housing provisions. I've also added, in a very truncated version, just kind of a tickler of the key 12 recommendations from the Planning Board dialogue session. The full report is in your packet, but just I thought it might be helpful. We have 1 through 6 here, and then 1 through 12, or remaining 12, to help refresh if you'd like to use those for reference.
All right, great, thank you. This is a work session meeting, and I should have pointed out, so we don't normally hear public comments, but we have a key public stakeholder that I would like to recognize. It's all right with the Board of Aldermen from the Orange Community Land Trust. If you would come up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Board of Aldermen. I'm glad to be here this evening. I'm Anita Badrock. I'm the Operations Manager for Community Home Trust, and I'm here tonight. Mr. Dowling, our Executive Director, wasn't able to be here, but did want me to come before you and just, first of all, tell you that this has really been exciting and interesting to see what's been happening here. You know, the Affordable Housing Task Force from the Board of Aldermen have come together to really make some specific recommendations. The Planning Board has pulled together this community dialogue, and a lot of good things have come out of that. And as we looked at this, one of the things we help you implement your affordable home ownership component of your affordable housing strategy. So my comments are really specifically more about that. And the real thing that we would encourage you to do is to really take some time and take a moment to look at some of these specific recommendations that your task force put together, coupled and brought in with the information from those public dialogue sessions, to really align those priorities and see and make sure that the things that you're recommending to change your ordinance really align with community interest and will achieve the intended results. I think that's more than anything. One thing that we have learned in working with affordable housing in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and now in Hillsborough, there are some preliminary plans for affordable housing in that area of the county, is that the market's really changed for everybody. It's changed for buyers, what they want to buy, what's important to them. It's changed for developers who develop this, who are your partners in developing this particular kind of housing. And so making sure that your ordinance really incentivizes what you want, I think, is an important thing for you all to consider. And as you move forward, continuing to talk with your community stakeholders and partners, including getting just some maybe preliminary feedback from those who will create your affordable housing, the developers who will create it, about whether these changes really will move them in that direction of creating affordable housing, of choosing that option in your land ordinance, will be important. We know that there's a great demand for affordable housing in Carrboro, and the affordable housing that has been created is beautiful. People like it. They want it, and we'd like to see more of that. But we just want to be sure that the changes that you're proposing, you know, the way that you decided to step back and take a look and gather some community input was really valuable, and we would just encourage you to really look at this in more detail and just be sure that it's achieving the results that you want. Yes.
I know that you and Robert had discussed, and Robert and I also discussed, the number one recommendation, which is reducing the number of affordable units from 15% to 12%, yes, while also reducing the cost of the unit from 80% AMI to 65% area median income. Could you speak a little bit to that, or?
Yeah, and I will tell you that our thought about that is that you've had an affordable housing path in your ordinance that developers could have 25% small houses or create affordable housing, and there hasn't been a whole lot of affordable housing created in that path, not as much as you would have hoped. And I don't know if these specific numbers really change the metrics for a developer to push them more in that direction or to make that more attractive to them. And that's the kind of thing that I think getting a little more information on and trying to understand a little better if those changes in those metrics really move it in that direction would be very helpful for you all.
So if we brought in some of the people who have built our larger developments and have operated under these ordinances to kind of say what would happen on the ground if we did this, might be a good way to do it.
I certainly think so. You know, you've had some folks who have done some development here that could be helpful to you, and letting you know if this is the kind of change that would really move them in that direction. And I don't know, because certainly reducing the number of units is something that would probably move them in that direction. But if you reduce the cost of those units that they're purchased from the developer or purchased by the owner, that increases the cost of developing those units. So that trade-off, I don't know if that balance is quite right or not. And I'm not really the best person to speak to that. I think someone with more understanding of development costs is the right person to speak to that.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions for Anita right now? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, your whole organization for all that you do for our community. Okay. Michelle, did you have anything you want to go ahead?
So I just wanted to update the board about our meeting on Friday. Sammy, Lydia, and I met with Tina staff on Friday, and we have another meeting scheduled for March 28th, where we're hoping to invite Bethany, who is sitting here, who may not know about that.
I do, and I can't attend, but I can designate somebody.
Okay, so we want representation from the planning board and potentially from Transportation Advisory Board, because they were involved in the planning board's follow-up as far as our report that the planning board gave us. And we also want to take time to thank the planning board again for the work that they did with the dialogue sessions and community engagement. And we spent Friday going through all of the recommendations and talked about how our recommendations from our task force aligned with those. And we have a lot more work to do with some of the recommendations. And we pulled a few things for a retreat topic that we can talk about later. One specifically, though, was how transportation impacts affordability, and where does it make sense to have affordable housing, and where do we need to have density, and how does transportation impact that, or transit impact that. So we felt like that was a larger topic that we need to follow up on. And there were a few other ideas. Lydia suggested an idea. Is it Ballantyne that has no bus
line? Yeah, we were trying to think of creative ways to explore transit type options, but we haven't gotten through that a little more yet. But talking about affordability and distance from town and how hard it is, as Robert himself has mentioned, that's what's been hard about selling units at Ballantyne.
So we talked about that. We also talked about the and Sammy brought this up, affordable. I know we're focusing on affordable housing. Sammy brought up affordable commercial space that we thought that was a topic to have maybe at our retreat too. And we talked about having understanding the zoning and how things could be zoned so that we could have more affordable options for people. And so that's a staff. We asked Tina to follow up with us about that. And we have other stakeholders that we want to be involved in the task force, like I said, at the next meeting, TAB and Planning Board. And I think you have a good suggestion about meeting with the developers. Again, we did that initially at the beginning of our task force. And it seems like going back to them with these recommendations to see if this actually does incentivize them building affordable units or having payment in lieu so that we can do something with affordable housing, that's a good idea that I think we could follow up on. And we wanted the board to talk about 1 through 3 of these recommendations. We wanted to pull number 4.
You're back, Aaron Warren.
Back again.
Oh, that's pretty good, isn't it?
No, those are back. Yeah. No. That. There it is.
Oh, right.
We wanted to pull number 4 because we got into a discussion about open space and public, private, and is it really open, and is that what we want to do? And, of course, we can talk about that if y'all want to, but we felt like focusing on 1 through 3 would be better.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one thing was these 4 are what came out of the task force's recommendations we got in December. And so when we looked at all of the additional recommendations from the planning board, we kind of tried to see if there's any complete overlap with these, and certainly with number 4, it opened up the open space kind of conversation. That seemed like one that is part of a larger conversation, but mm-hmm. but we thought 1, 2, and 3 were ones that perhaps we could discuss and maybe move forward And then these other recommendations deal with and on our next meeting and or further expansion of that group.
So is the idea to take these and the list you just went through and have that be like the meat of our retreat? Is that the idea?
I know some of the
that's key, a good idea.
Some of the key concepts we came up with got so big, we thought, gosh, we all need to sit down and talk about it.
And
these.
I think the retreat would be a really good place to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of recommendations by the planning board. Fortunately, some of them do overlap with these. So, like the fourth one is number six mm-hmm. from the planning board. And then the number two from the planning board, which speaks of. Very low, 50% of medium income to low, 50 to 80% mm-hmm. to moderate, 80 to 115%. This essentially is speaking to the low portion, but there's an opportunity also to be thinking of the other portions, perhaps by thinking of not just new construction and affordable housing that can be achieved through it, but other models that are already represented by some organizations in our town, such as, for example, Weaver Street Co-Housing Authority, which right. uses existing houses. You know, there are different models, so there's an opportunity to compile what those models are and think comprehensively in how to achieve a broader range of affordability. You know, other questions of, yeah, the point of affordable commercial as it relates to the green tract, the opportunity, because the small area plan for Chapel Hill describes kind of mixed use there. But the interest in the long history of that tract pointing to the importance of affordable something, affordable housing specifically for that, the 18 acres there. So these two things seem to be happening simultaneously. And then other opportunities, like on our 2020 vision, there's the one that stood out to me is creating a low-interest loan pool for individuals and nonprofits that wish to buy and rehabilitate housing if desired. Mm-hmm. So even from the 2020 vision, we didn't really get into it in our task force, but I think there's an opportunity to think of some of the recommendations as they connect to both the task force and the planning board's points.
And I know only two items that we just need to be more educated on and or have more information on to even feel like we can speak to, you know, possible ideas. You know, one was it was related to number five of the planning board. We're talked about look at rezoning infill projects and revising perhaps current limitations on or conditions for secondary units. And I'm generally aware of accessory usage and different things like that, but overall we thought it would be good to have a primer on that before we start making suggestions. But it's a very, very valid recommendation and one that we should certainly look at. And then there were one or two that kind of overlaid with that information-wise, such as identifying different type of land that might be available, different tracts that might be available, and then a biggie to develop a master land use plan, which is one, you know, a lot of these are long-term, but they all go toward the same goal.
Well, I'm glad that Sammy and Lydia brought up not only diversified affordable, but the potential for accessory mm-hmm. units. One of the things that I know that when I was in the dialogue came up were some of the existing spaces, infill, granny flats, and that's something I know Planning Board has talked about for years, that there's citizen interest in looking at models other than new developments. So, you know, if those two, the diversified, affordable, and the rezoning and accessible units could be kind of paired, that would be great.
So I just wanted to add one or two thoughts with respect to this. One is that, you know, I think on number one that, you know, for me, conceptually, the recommendation number one works, but I think it's important not to get too caught up on exactly what the numbers are quite yet,
right.
and that's where kind of that conversation that Anita was alluding to with some of the developers really needs to happen. So whether it's exactly 12% or whatever, or whether the income limit that we're trying to reach is 65% exactly is, you know, that's the part that we need to have a conversation about. But I think the concept I like a lot. I want to flag for the town attorney in particular the fact that, you know, we normally we have in the past relied on 80% of area median income as a threshold. That is a stat that that the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development comes up with. And in my, I think I'm remembering this correctly, but I think specifically Housing and Urban Development comes up annually with a figure that's 80% of area median income, a figure that is, I believe the next one down is 50%, and the next one down is 30%. Or anyway, they come up with they have a three-tiered system at Housing and Urban Development. And I guess my point is that we're starting to head, it seems, toward a number that's somewhere between two of the federally defined stats. So I think it'll just be wherever we wind up, whatever that threshold is that we as a group decide we're comfortable with, we need a clear definition of how do you calculate 65% or whatever, because interestingly, you might think that 50% of our area median income would be precisely 5/8 of whatever 80% is. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that is not the way that HUD does it. So in my experience, in my day job, if you will, it often comes down to the precise figures, exactly what is that threshold income. So we just need to make sure that we spell into the ordinance, whatever the change is, exactly how you figure out what 65% is, given that HUD doesn't actually come up with a 65% figure. And, you know, in other words, 65% could be defined as being X number of 17ths of 80%, or it could be defined as being X number of, you know, a multiplier off of the 50% number or a multiplier off the 80% number. And if it all truly were spelled out in a linear fashion by HUD, it wouldn't make a difference which number you worked off of. But in fact, curiously enough, they don't work on a strictly linear basis. So we just need to be really clear when we get down to the ordinance level about how we're defining 65%.
I know Robert Dowling has spent an incredible amount of time dealing with the HUD numbers, particularly since our AMI is so much more than just Carrboro and Chapel Hill, and it throws everything off, and right. That it hasn't risen as the cost of housing has risen.
And, so and in fact, it's declined because, curiously enough, at one time, our area for area median income was considered to be Orange and Chatham,
right. Mm-hmm.
And now our area for area median income is considered to be Orange and Durham.
Yeah.
And the income situations in Durham and Chatham County are different enough that it has really kind of it's actually led to a decrease in the eligible numbers. But my point is not exactly what the numbers are, nor which way it ought to be calculated, but it just needs to be spelled out in a really crystal clear way. Do you figure 65% by working down from the 80% number or working up from the 50% number? Because there ends up being a difference, because curiously enough, the numbers are not linear. All right, so I just wanted to flag that for the town attorney. On point number two, I think you know, I don't have a problem with what point number two says, but I just want to, and I've made this point before, including recently with the Board of Aldermen, but it was at a meeting that wasn't broadcast on TV, and the media wasn't present for, so I want to drag it out again and just make the point that, you know, we have this Affordable Housing Trust Fund, and payments in lieu go into our trust fund for the town of Carrboro. And the reality is that very few payments in lieu have ever been made into our trust fund. And I believe that all of the payments in lieu that have ever been made into the trust fund, all of that money has now been allocated, so that the current situation is that we have no money at all in our Affordable Housing Trust Fund for the town of Carrboro. And the significance I want to attach to that is it often comes up that we have situations where there is somebody who has inherited a house or who has owned a house for a very long time, is maybe now retired and living on little more, or if anything, more than Social Security income, and where that person really needs some assistance in maintaining their home to remain, to be able to remain as an owner-occupant in their home. And the Affordable Housing Trust Fund would be, and is every now and then, a great source of funding to help with those situations. But that right now, because we have allocated all the funds that are in that trust fund, we don't have anything left to help out. And so, for example, there's, without mentioning names or streets or whatever, but there's a family in Carrboro that is living in a house where it's a house that they inherited through their family. They own it outright, but they're extremely low income, and the house is in really deplorable condition. They've got carpet beetles, carpet beetles are very similar in effect to bed bugs, so that the children and the people who live in the family are being bitten all night long by insects, can't sleep through the night. And this is I guess what I'm trying to say is, this is the kind of situation that would be perfect to address with the trust fund, but we have no money. And so I think it's important for us to make sure that we move away from this situation where we have nothing to work with in our trust fund, yeah, where we have no resources left to help out people in these sort of desperate circumstances. And not to disagree in any way with what's recommended in number two, but just to say, let's all bear that in mind, that the reality is that when we accept payments in lieu, we may be losing one unit out of a particular development that could otherwise have happened, but we're also gaining a lot in terms of trying to help out people who are existing owner occupants of affordable homes in our community. And that there's a lot of value to that too. So I think, and I've said this a couple of times over the last 9.5 years or whatever it's been, and I've never come up with a great idea about how to really spell this out, but I think it would be helpful, and I would appreciate if staff could explore this, if we could develop some guidelines that would help guide future members of the Board of Aldermen in deciding when is it appropriate and to what extent is it appropriate to accept payments in lieu as opposed to the affordable housing, you know, because
so it's consistent.
You know, yeah, exactly. So it's fairly consistent, and so that various developers can feel correctly that they're being treated in an equal manner, so that it doesn't become about
what
mood the board is in, or whether we like the developer or whether we don't like the developer, but rather whether it makes sense from some public policy point of view it would really be helpful to have some guidelines, not necessarily, they don't have to be absolute and hard and fast, but just some a list of considerations that we'll take into account when we decide whether or not to accept a payment in lieu. And number two suggests actually one criterion that could be a part of that, which is no more than X percent of the affordable housing requirement might be met by payment in lieu. Anyway,
I think that would also help the planning board in reviewing plans if they had the same guidelines as to when it would be appropriate. And
anyway,
starting at that level.
And of course, it'll inevitably turn out that you can never really contemplate every scenario and every possibility. But I just think it would be helpful to have some guidelines or some principles or something articulated as kind of the basis for deciding when it is that we do or don't accept a certain amount of payment in lieu.
So the way I read it right now is it just says allow for payments in lieu, minimum of 5%. So what you're recommending is that we should probably add some more description to that, because it's pretty broad right now.
Right. I mean, just so that when the Board of Aldermen accepts payments in lieu in the future, that we'll have some reason why, you know, because the situation with this particular development is, you know, and maybe it's something as simple as, you know, all the units in this development are proposed to be one bedroom, and we only need so many one bedroom units, you know, and that there's the needs are so much more diverse than that we want, you know, or I don't know, but it just seems to me that it would be helpful for us to have some adopted guidelines or some kind of guideline for. Mm-hmm.
So do you see that as a retreat topic?
I don't know. What I would really love is for the staff to give some thought to that and to try and, you know, put a kind of a straw person out there as far as what those guidelines might look like and mm-hmm. maybe have this board react to them. Anyway, this seems to me something to give us some basis for deciding one way or another in the future whether or not we do or don't.
So I agree. That would be good to have some guidelines. And it seems like there are a few follow-up points. So I'm wondering if we'd want those guidelines actually before we got to a retreat, if that's possible. We haven't scheduled a retreat, just so that we're being really clear about how we might want to change the affordable housing strategy instead of having brainstorming session there about guidelines. So there's that question. I don't have a question for staff about how long that would take without any expectation attached to that. And then it seems like our task force needs to go back and both meet with the developers and meet with Robert or staff from the Community Home Trust and meet with TAB and planning. Those are some follow-up steps for us. And I would think those need to happen before the retreat as well for us to really get there and do some work around what this is going to look like as far as a strategy.
And I would add, not just with the Home Trust, but that we...
Well, other people,
That it be those more were broad, just to make sure we're representing the diversity of ways in which affordable housing is achieved.
Mm-hmm. How will you determine which builders, developers you want to...
Well, we met with developers before. It seems like bringing those people back again. I don't know how...
Folks who
you sent out a broad invitation to
folks who've actually developed in recent years.
Yeah.
I mean that'd be my question.
And who've made affordable housing part of their
Can you say who, just a little bit about who was
folks who may
there
do more construction?
So that we're not.
Yeah, we invited folks who developers who had. Provided, included in their projects or committed to including in their projects. So they'd sort of participated in the conversation, understood the regulations and all affordable units. They'd considered either this, you know, going, taking the size limited provisions beyond what beyond just providing size limited and going with affordables instead. So that was the group of folks we invited. And we invited realtors who were associated with those projects, projects that had been approved. Some of the projects had been had units constructed, and others are still permits that have not advanced to construction. And we invited, Robert Dowling, the Home Trust, was also represented in the conversation, so that
was. And these recommendations came from that meeting. I mean, they came from what the developers were saying, just to speak to incentivizing them to do something.
The task force developed its recommendations after
that conversation.
Yeah.
And so just the last thing I wanted to say is let's connect number one and number three, or let's at least consider connecting number one and number three, which is, number three says retain the density bonus only for built units as an incentive to provide more houses and make fewer payments in lieu, which I think makes a lot of sense. But let's connect the dots there, because right now there's already there can be situations where there is a slight disconnect because to give an example right now, and this is going to be kind of over the top because these kind of numbers don't usually come up. But for example, if someone were owned a piece of land or had a piece of land where theoretically 100 units could be developed, then if they built 15% affordable housing, that they could build up to 150 units. So to build 15%, they can build up to 150 units as long as half of the bonus units are affordable housing. So half of the bonus units in that situation amounts to 25. 25 is slightly more than 15% of 150. That is say, half the if the base density would allow 100, the bonus units would be 50. Half of the bonus units would be 25, but 15% affordable would be 22 and a half, or in other words, 23. My point being that that to get the full benefit of the bonus in that situation, you're actually building more than the 15% that's sort of the community's expectations. Let me put it that
on
way.
The initial number.
Based upon not just based upon the initial number, but based even upon the total bonus number. 25% is more than 15% of 150. I don't want to get into graphing the curve to try and explain all this, but just to point out that there's something that's just slightly off about that in terms of the relationship between the number of bonus units in order to take advantage of the 50% affordable housing density bonus, blah blah blah, and as you fade from 15% to 12%, and from 80% of every median income back to 65, those numbers start to get even further out of whack.
Right.
Anyway, just to say, let's again, we'll throw it into the attorney's court and just say, let's just keep an eye on that ball and just say that the internal logic of the policy versus what's actually called for in the ordinance needs to be, those two things, it just seems to me, need to be kind of harmonized in some way.
When you overlay
the lawyers do the calculus
on it, it can skew the numbers.
It's off right now is what I'm saying, but the way it's off is very slight. With the kind of changes that are contemplated in number one, the numbers start to get off further and further. I'm not sure what conclusion we ought to draw, but just that somehow the policy and the ordinance ought to line up. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's an important red flag for what you need to watch for when you, if you look to change the metric.
Yes.
There you go. This is really kind of the implication of it all. So anyway, so somehow if the attorney could, I'm not sure whether our town attorneys are really excellent at math or not, but
you'll be getting into trouble if you have us doing all the math. But we'll have help from people.
Okay, you can
subcontract that part out. I don't know, but anyway, but the point being that somehow we just need to kind of look at how those two interact and make sure that they they're not working at odds in any way. Go ahead.
I just wanted to kind of come back to an earlier question when we said some of these decisions or some of these discussions we'd like to have be a part of our retreat, and in particular of the joint recommendations from the Planning Board and the TAB, number 3 and number 6. Those were ones that seemed really big, really broad, ones that we all, would want to dialogue about. Number 3 had to do with transportation costs and how those relate to affordable housing. And the more we talked about it, the more we saw the three of us even just had a lot to say about it. Number 6 was looking at longstanding policies, but in particular that one talked about the open space and recreation space requirement. Those two were the two in particular, I think, that we wanted to pull out and try to talk about at our retreat.
Okay. All right. Anything further on this item right now?
I'd like to thank everybody that's worked so hard on it. Thank the task force. And Dan, if you're streaming, thank you. I hope it's cooled down. I heard it was real hot in Australia. Story, yeah. But thanks for your work on this, Dan.
Yeah. It probably is too. All right. Okay. I don't think we have. Well,
except do we want to direct staff to come back with some guidelines for us around the...
Yeah, we didn't move that as an action item.
Okay, I'm moving it. Do we need the staff to do other things?
It's
related to this.
Bring us at whatever retreat we might schedule some proposed guidelines for deciding about payments in lieu.
I was wondering if we could actually look at that.
If this is the only topic of the retreat, great.
If we have other topics, it's going to be hard to get to. We're going to talk about guidelines and not actually get to the core of the recommendations, I think.
All right. What else do you want to say then?
I wanted to know if it's reasonable for them to bring it back before a retreat. We have not scheduled a retreat, though.
They can definitely bring it back before.
Some non-scheduled event.
I have your April 9th for the date for you to discuss the board retreat, and I think you're probably looking at June.
Yeah. What was the date last year?
It was June 23rd last year.
Is that unreasonable?
No, I think we could pull together guidelines on this before the end of this season. So if there's a retreat, we're going to be around before the end of June, I think we
probably. Well, I'm asking though if you can do it like at the begin before the retreat, because we'll probably
meet. Yeah,
no,
I think
so. Okay, cool. So okay. I'm moving that we direct the staff.
The other item that we may want to include is number 7, which is actually calling for a map. And if we're going to review, would make sense to have something.
Remind me, a map of what?
All vacant and non-revenue generating publicly and privately owned land, including parking lots, and identify tracts available for affordable housing or commercial uses that support affordable housing.
Planning staff.
I was thinking about that, but I think that's
Good.
Yeah,
the question of having a map with item number 7 represented.
It's just up there.
I think we could prepare a map that shows that, sure.
In conjunction
with this other.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Thanks,
Chris.
Thanks.
Thank you. Because that's part of your motion.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's Michelle's motion. I second.
All right. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, matter passed unanimously. That brings us to an update on changes to the Orange County Recycling Program.